So, blessings and challenges of transition. Changes. We heard a good bit here about changes already and how they kind of push us around and all. What I'm going to do is I'll jump right in here and just give you a few excerpts from my favorite psalm these days. And my life verses keep changing just a tad bit as time goes along. And so they've changed to these three, actually the second two. The first one I just put in here so that you would have a little frame of reference. So in my Bible, right at the top of it, it says, "The prayer of an old man." And as soon as I saw that, I thought, okay, this one is important. I better pay attention. So it begins, "In thee, O Lord, do I put my trust. Let me never be put to confusion." You can pick up on that "let me never be put to confusion" thing and just interpret it as you will. But I remember thinking as soon as I said, yes, amen. And Lord, give me grace day in and day out not to all of a sudden lose it. I still enjoy teaching. I really do. But you know what? I decided I probably better step back some before it catches up to me. I do find myself just not being quite as quick on my feet anymore and maybe not quite as alert to what's going on in the classroom and all of that. So it's always a good idea maybe to step aside ahead of time. Let me never be put to confusion. But the second two, I really have embraced to myself. Oh God, thou hast taught me from my youth, and hitherto have I declared thy wondrous works. Now also when I am old and gray-headed, O God, forsake me not until I have showed thy strength unto this generation and thy power to everyone that is to come. So, Brother Marvin, I heard you saying that maybe it was you, Brother Ray, who said we might feel like somewhere along the line we're not all that useful. Okay, hold on. I look at the power of that verse now in that prayer. When I'm old and gray-headed, O God, forsake me not until I have showed thy strength. This is for you now. Take it on yourself. Thy strength unto this generation and thy power to everyone that is to come. There you go. If you have been running out of things to do as a grandpa or a great-grandpa or a great-great or whatever and grandmas, you got it right there. You got your task. All right, now jump right in here. So when Marvin gave me this assignment, I first of all thought, there's going to be at least 80% of the people who are present who will be far more qualified to talk about this than me. I'm 70 years old. Just, I know I look like older than that, but I'm 70. Okay, so... And just kind of getting into the front end of this thing that I guess that they call golden age. So let me get an idea here. How many of you are 75 or older? Look at that. What am I doing here? How many of you are 80 and older? Okay, we're doing a little better now. Anybody 90 and older? Got one here. And 100 or older. I was hoping I'd run out of them somewhere. All right. I'm just saying up front here, I don't know that I'm qualified to talk a lot here, but I'll give you what I've observed myself, what I've observed in others, and perhaps you'll be able to add to them. So what I did is I just made two columns. A column called blessings and the accompanying challenge that typically goes along with a blessing. So I think I have about seven of them or so, and I'll go ahead and walk down through them and maybe tell a story a little bit along the way. I am, again, aware that all of us are getting a little older. If you can't read that, okay, I'll read it. And if you want a copy of it, well, we'll get you a copy of it sometime too. So change creates opportunity to evaluate and reset. Okay, it's a time when you can stop and ask yourself, no, wait a minute. Where have I been headed and What have I been doing, and what do I want to do from here on out if the Lord gives me life and breath? I'll just admit to you that after retiring from Faith Builders, that Sheila and I built a house last summer while our son moved into our place. Again, it was Erickson and Marilyn moving in there. And so I was so busy, I said, look, we're going to put off even thinking about what comes next and the details of that until we're getting in this house and get settled down and so on. Well, we're about there. Well, we are in the house, but of course we have things to do there. But change creates opportunity. Old age creates opportunity, I think. I know perhaps opportunities begin to diminish. I can see that. But at the same time, listen, brothers and sisters, the world is wide open to us this day, from what I can tell, in terms of opportunity that is before us. And so seize the opportunity. And I don't know what it is for you. I would guess here there's a variety of people. I know there's a variety of people, and you are at different places. Some of you up there on the upper end, you're not quite sure what opportunities still are there, but I think they're there. What are the challenges? Overestimating one's capacity or unrealistic expectations. I don't want you to get any wild ideas here, but I've done just a little bit of long distance running in my time. Okay. If you are 60 years old and you can run a half marathon in under 2 hours, you're doing pretty good. But I got to tell you, there are certain expectations that are just unrealistic. Now, running a half marathon is unimportant, but there are a multitude of things that we might aspire to do. And you just got done hearing me say, well, seize the opportunity when it comes your way. I'm just also saying the challenge with that is sometimes we can be overly enthusiastic and expect more of ourselves than what we actually are capable of doing. Second one I have here is there's a blessing, there's a relief from a demanding schedule. And some of you are by now are saying, really? It still kind of sits pretty heavy on me. Well, you know, we're busy. Sheila and I are quite busy, really, with plenty of things to do. We're not asking for more. But in truth, I don't get awake in the morning knowing that I've got to be in class. I've got 3 or 4 classes to do today, and I've got to get them ready. And I'm going to be standing in front of 15, 20, 25, 30 people, and they're going to be expecting me to do something rather than nothing. That's not in my agenda these days, and you know what? I'm kind of glad. I'd love to teach, but to do it well, it's demanding. So relief from a demanding schedule. But the challenge is building new, healthy schedule rhythms. So, and I call them healthy schedule rhythms. We call them habits, things that we do just typically. And I'm going to take you to a little rubric that has really, really been helpful for me on this. This is not original with me. Some of you probably have seen this one before. It's an excellent little way to think about establishing new rhythms. What are they going to be? Okay. I believe this is Stephen Covey's rubric. He calls it his time matrix or something like that. So up on the top there, you see the issues that are urgent, those that are not urgent. And then you see a category on the left-hand side there of the chart, important and not important. And so you put those together in quadrant one, the upper left, that's urgent and important. Quadrant two is not urgent and important. Quadrant three, bottom left, is urgent but not important. And in bottom right is not urgent and not important. This little thing here has probably been more helpful to me than anything I've ever done that actually has. And Sheila, she had a chance to get up and say, she would say, preach it, brother, and now please live it. So we'll see here what we can do with it. So I'll just give you a little way to think about this, because I'm going to give you opportunity, if not this evening, tomorrow sometime, to respond to this with other categories. I'm going to give you some simple ones here. An urgent and important issue is when the oil dash light comes on. One of the instructions I gave all of my children, and we have two daughters and five boys, but all of them, if you're driving along and the lights, that red light right there comes on, stop right now. Just stop. Pull off to the side. Sheila had some other instructions for our children. She was with one of our daughters in one of the early days of trying to train them how to drive, and things weren't going so well. She said, listen, if you see a telephone pole, stop. I would imagine that's rather urgent and important too. But you get the point. Those lights come on. That's an example. Listen, I have lived way too much of my life right there, putting fires out. I've been a teacher. I've been an administrator. I've done various things. And it's always from one thing to the next, the urgent, the important. And if your life is crowded in there, I can tell you, it's a very, very busy life. Not urgent, but important. Pull the dipstick and check the oil. See, that typically, it doesn't rise enough for people to do it regularly. But it's important. And you all know, without me even saying much more, that if you actually learn how to do that, you can save an awful lot that might end up in that urgent and important category. Okay, so not urgent, but important. Think of the kinds of things. It's called maintenance. It's called planning. That's the category right there. In category three, there's another important one, the manufacturer's oil specs. But that's not urgent. You probably could use a different oil and get by with it, right? But those are important, but not urgent. But it might save you a lot of money and time sometime, if you pay attention there. And category three, listen to this one. This is an interesting one. So Valvoline oil is on sale at Tractor Supply, and the sale ends April 18th. That's tomorrow, right? Okay, a felt reality is not reality. So felt reality is that's urgent. At least if you let it be. It's like, it's on sale, I only have till tomorrow to get it, and I'm gonna have to go. How much money is it actually gonna save you? And how much fuel might you actually spend going to get that oil, particularly if you make a special trip to get there? It's urgent, but it's not that important. Okay, so that's a category. It's a category to consider. Anyway, you get the idea of what, it's something that calls for your attention right now, pulls you away from whatever, but it doesn't really have to happen. And the last one, who was the manufacturer of Pennzoil in 1942? These are your factoids, right? It's kind of like, well, it's not urgent, and it's not important either. Neither one that matters. Now, if you happen to be one of those people, you just kind of like information and all that, well, enjoy it. I don't have an issue with figuring it out. But if you're working on schedules, you're working on what you're going to do with the 24 hours a day that God has given you, well, you might find something like this a little important to sit down and think about it and actually work through it and ask yourself those questions. What category do I work in? Stephen Covey, who wrote the book on this, he said that in all of his work that he's done over the years with leaders and companies and on and on and on and on, he can almost always, when he walks into a problem, if they're having serious problems, they are not putting enough of their energy into the not urgent and important category. That's where the failure's at. I've got issues along these lines. I really do. So I'd lived, as I said, way too much of my life that way. So I got sick back in, when I was somewhere in my 40s with Crohn's disease. And our 40, yeah, I couldn't have been in my 40s because it was our 40th anniversary. On our 40th anniversary, we decided to go to Prince Edward Island. And on the way to Prince Edward Island, Sheila said to me, she said, Melvin, do you realize that this is the first time since our honeymoon that we have gone on a trip somewhere that you're not preaching or teaching or doing something that you've got to do while we were on the trip? And I said, oh, that's not true. But then I couldn't think of any. Well, it wasn't the end of the world, but that's what was happening there is everything was urgent and important, you know, and it got crowded into that category. And Sheila was never upset at me about that. I shouldn't say she never was, but most of the time not. It was a wake-up call for me. Yes, you know what? That's where you've lived too much of your life. And so, you know what? Here I am, 70 years old. We're in our house. And I'm starting to sit down and think about this little time matrix and ask myself the question, so, what are you doing in category 1, 3, up to 3 and 4, okay? How much of your time is getting consumed right in those areas, and how much time are you actually putting into pulling out that dipstick and checking to see what that oil level is actually like? And that's what I'm going to suggest to you. We'll have some other things on that as I go along here, but we'll let that go for now and go back to where we were at here. So building new healthy schedule rhythms. And again, with the spread of ages here, I mean, if you're 80 years old, I haven't tried to think how you plan there. I'm thinking about a 70-year-old person, but put yourself in those shoes. Reduced public responsibility. Marvin touched on this just a little bit. So, yes, so I don't have nearly the public responsibility that I had here just a year ago. I'm glad for that. What is the challenge? Let go and let others. I think you touched on this. So when public responsibility goes down, I know a number of you are beyond that quite a few years by now, but when it does, I've had way too many stories of people who just, okay, they were supposed to step back, but they never let go of the responsibility and left younger people actually step up and do what needs to be done. This can be a business. This can be a church, this can be a school, this could be another organization. Wherever the shoe fits, you can put it on. But so let go and let others. And oh, by the way, probably one of the issues I've been thinking about a lot in recent years is the sovereignty of God. And that is that God is sovereign. Jesus is the Lord of the church. I'm not. And so when it's time to let go and step back, well, let others step up and let the Lord move through them. It doesn't mean that you can't offer some, you can see what the next point is here, or retreat into hibernation. Now that's what my brothers that are in the leadership at Meadville Mennonite, they say, okay, we're fine with you retiring, but are you going to help a little? Would you give a little advice if there is some advice needed? Well, of course, I think so, I hope. But I will admit there is that temptation to retreat or hibernate. Just let me out of here. Most people don't know this about me at all, but I really prefer to be I don't like crowds. I like you, but I don't like crowds. I'd just as well be, I don't know, I like solitude. I like the quietness of just being able to meditate myself. It'd be easy for me to go here. Just kind of retreat from life. Say, okay, whatever happens, happens. Okay, that's not the call here. Yes, let go and let others, but don't hibernate. Now, wherever it is that you actually find yourself in life, there's the blessing, here's the challenge. Fourth, increased opportunities to engage with children, grandchildren, and perhaps great-grandchildren if the Lord has given you this. Now, I have a topic here tomorrow, I believe, on intentional grandparenting. So I'm not going to say a lot about this right now, but that obviously these opportunities are increased. And here we got one of my sons said to me not all that long ago, probably 5 years ago, he said to me, "Dad, I have a question for you. With all of your mentoring and advising and this and that, do you have any time for your grandsons at all?" And I didn't say it, but I felt, ouch. Ouch, uh-oh, I'm hearing something here. And am I paying attention? But more about that perhaps tomorrow. So increased opportunities and, discern when wanted in contrast to being unwanted. And this might, I don't know if I have a proper discernment on this yet or not. Now, my father is dead and gone, but I can't help but tell you this little story. He was a wonderful dad. You can touch base with Wilmer. He told Wilmer more stories than he told me by the end of his life. But at any rate, he trained me. I am largely who I am with the internal disciplines that get up in the morning and get at it and work hard. They came straight from my dad. Grew up on a dairy farm. And am I ever glad of it? It was a great place to grow up, and my dad did superb at that kind of training. Well, I'm married now in the story that I'm telling you, and I'm, living there close to the farm on another little farmette. And my dad had chickens. And he had chicken manure. And he did help us a lot. Just to give you a really good side to that story, my son and I grew wheat back in Letterkenny on some rented ground, and we harvested that in the summer when I wasn't teaching school, as well as doing some other custom combining. Mind you, my dad, he would take its chicken manure from his chicken house and take it back in Letterkenny to where my wheat fields were, and he would top dress that, and he didn't charge me a thing. He said it was, I just have to have some place to go with this manure, I'm so delighted. So he did that. Well, one other thing he did with that chicken manure was, I'm getting ready to go to school, I'm all dressed up and ready to head out the door, and on my little farm, we had some apple trees, some small apple trees. And one of the chicken houses that my dad had was, it was not the dry manure, it was a sloppy kind of manure. Here, I looked out the window, and here my dad has a tractor and manure spreader, and he's backing up to those trees. And he's turning the PTO on it. I mean, there's this liquid manure going all over the place. you know what? I really wasn't all that happy to see all that chicken manure flying all over those trees that were just about ready to blossom and all that kind of stuff. But he meant it for good. I just hope that I'm thinking, and you know, maybe my sons really wouldn't want that to be done or whatever. So discern when wanted in contrast to being unwanted. Pursue personal interest. Yeah, this is a blessing. Hobbies, reading, recreation, travel, vacation. That's a good place here to pause. I have tried hard not to be critical of others. I've tried to ask myself some hard questions. So if I did have the time and I did have the money, would it be a wise thing to step and do a tour of Europe, since I kind of like history anyway? Or go to Florida. Forgive me if I'm stepping on any toes, but you can start down through the list of things, and all of a sudden, right there they are, they're right in front of you. You can do them. Okay? You didn't hear me say that you ought not, it's forbidden to do any of that. I didn't say that, right? All I'm saying here is we have that opportunity, like probably never before, if you're healthy and you've got a little money in your back pocket. And you've got time in your hands, you can get up and do things. Okay, don't hear me pitching stones here, because I hope to do a few more things than I did before too. Just the challenge. You can get derailed from what God wants of me and what I want for myself. It's not all that hard to just kind of get off the path here. All right, and again, I just stick it in here. It's a blessing. There's a challenge that comes along with it that we ought to pay attention to, I think. Opportunity to downsize. Now Sheila wants to take the platform. because I'm the sentimental person. I'm the person who, I was trained as a mechanic. I know a little bit about mechanics, worked for an IH dealership for a couple of years. I know what it's like to go to all of a sudden need that bolt, that particular bolt that you're pretty sure that you have somewhere. And if you don't have it somewhere, don't mind you, you're going to have to go for another 15, 20 minutes or whatever, maybe even longer, to find that thing. And so I'm keeping all of this stuff. And I've got stuff all over the place. Sheila says regularly, your sons are going to be so upset with you when you're gone. And I'm like, well, she said that one day. And so notice this is a relationship test, this opportunity to downsize. Because what, when, how? So honestly, Sheila and I have a lot of fun with this. But she's the one, her way of keeping things clean is to throw away anything that doesn't happen to be useful in the next moment. She's not that bad. I'm stretching it, of course. But, you know, it's chuck it. Just get rid of that. You're not going to use that, she'll tell me. And I'm like, well, I might. Anyway, so we were talking about this one. This was a couple of years ago. And I said, you know what? You're more right than wrong. I say it that way. So I got my hay wagon out, mind you. And I backed it up to our garage. And we have a loft above the garage with steps going up to it. And I mean, everything I didn't know what else to do with, I trotted them up those steps and they got stuck back in corners and all over the place. By this time, the boys are gone and all of their skis and ski boots and I don't know what all, they're all up there too. And so I say to myself, okay, I backed that wagon up there. And Sheila says, you're going to have a yard sale? I said, no, I'm not having a yard sale. It's all for free. She said, nobody will want that junk. I said, well, okay. If nobody wants that junk, all right, then I'm going to set it out at the end of the road. I'm putting a big sign of it. Everything is free except for the wagon. So I did. And we just laughed all day long. You know, by the end of that day, couldn't have been more than three pieces left on that wagon. Everything was gone. And the funniest thing was, is we would see these, Sheila had the binoculars, and we're 600 feet. She was watching this, and she was giving me the play-by-play action, and so I had to get, we saw these two guys with a really nice, fancy sports car pull up, you know, there was a convertible with a roof down, and, you know, their Bermuda shorts, and they jumped out of the car and looked around to see if anybody was looking and tore around that wagon and grabbed stuff off of it. Off they went. So there's an opportunity to downsize. And by the way, I'm getting ready to do another wagon load. And so that lets you know how much junk I actually had tucked away. Now, we're having fun here with it. But you know what? Why not get some mileage out of this? You know, rather than take it all to the junk, so maybe somebody else wants this stuff. Take it out there and give it to them. Just let them have it. We're enjoying actually going, Sheila has collected books. She's been a big collector of children's books over the years. Lots of them. And some of them she had bought specifically for Ryan or Jordan or whoever it has to have their names in them there on. So she's gone through the shelves and pulled off the books that either they really liked or she had actually bought for them or whatever. And she started to hand those out ahead of time so that the children are getting some of those things into their libraries. So there's a sense in which we are actually enjoying this time enjoying it mostly. Now and then it gets a little tedious. But getting this stuff together and dispersing it, it's a blessing to give. Many of you know that way more than I do. Okay, and I'm just saying that here, living in that urgent, important thing, huge sections of my life, just putting out fires as an administrator and as a dad and all that kind of stuff, it seemed like I really hardly had time to sit down and even think about some of that. Now that I do, I actually am giving it. I'm finding some joy in walking through those things. So I would just I'm going to stop there for the, wait a minute, no, I'm not going here. Okay, I kind of jumped out of my present mode, but that's fine, it'll be, can you read that? This is from 2 Timothy 1:7. I really want to give this to you. So we've had a little fun here talking about some of these things, but life is pretty serious. And you get to this time of life and you start thinking through these things and asking yourself, what haven't I done that I ought to do? What did I goof up terribly that I can't find any way to, I don't know how to repair it. Challenges, blessings and challenges. Well, I just would like to say this. Here's 2 Timothy 1:7 for us all. God hath not given us the spirit of fear. Wherever you find yourself, whatever situation you're up against, family-wise or downsizing, I don't know. Yeah, you can fill in the blank there. God hath not given us a spirit of fear, but he has given us a spirit of power, of love, and of a sound mind. Okay, and God be merciful to us and bless us with sound minds till the very day we die. But as long as we have them, exercise them in these areas, these categories that there's many more that we could talk about. But let's not enter into these transitions fearfully. So, for example, I stepped down from the ministry at Meadville. I can be fearful of what's going to happen next. Or I can be fearful of what Sheila and I are going to do. I hear, look, exercise the grace that God has given to you to engage the issues, face them head on, and do the best you can with them. And he goes on to say, be not thou therefore ashamed of the testimony of our Lord, nor of me as prisoner, but this is in the same passage, but be thou partaker of the afflictions of the gospel according to the power of God. Not fear, thinking through things carefully, and giving ourselves wholeheartedly to the work of God, even in our old age. Psalm 71, I quoted those verses earlier. These verses were from Psalm 71. These are two. Oops, not at the right place. These are two. Thy righteousness also, O God, is very high. Who has done great things, O God? Who is like unto thee? Now look at this next line, verse 20. Thou which hast showed me great and sore troubles. We think this is a psalm of David. David saw some very difficult times. Thou which hast showed me great and sore troubles shalt quicken me again, and shall bring me up again from the depths of the earth. David here is speaking, saying, look, I have seen more trouble than I want to talk about. But I have the confidence that God is able. He is able to quicken, make alive, make me capable to do whatever he has given me capacity to do. He's made me capable. And he'll bring me up again from the depths of the earth. Again, I don't know what challenges you're up against. I'm sure you've had many blessings. This comes from that prayer of the old man. He's praying this as an old man. I don't know what to make of 21. He says, thou shalt increase my greatness and comfort me on every side. This is the psalmist speaking. And so I'm going to let you with that, just with that blessing. I'd hope that you can lay hold of the possibilities, the opportunities, regardless of where you're at in life, that God will bring your way day in and day out. I sometimes think of my brother Claire, maybe just to close this with a little bit of an account. How many of you knew my brother Claire? Okay, I see a number of hands going up around here. So Claire was our bishop in our church, mind you. But along in his 30s, I'm going to say a mid-30s, or not 40 yet anyway, he was stricken with multiple sclerosis. And it was bad. I mean, and over time, he slowly went from being able to walk to not being able to walk to finally, in the end, needing help to do almost everything. I interacted with him fairly often. He had his discouraging days, just to be sure, as you might expect. But I always, I can't think of one time that I didn't walk in to his home and talk with him a bit, pray with him some, listen to him talk, see the smile on his face, and walk out shaking my head saying, okay, well, if he can live above the circumstances, Melvin, what is your problem? So even as and he died when he was 70 years old, my age. I believe I'm right on that. I think he was 70. So even though he was debilitated, cut down, didn't seem to have these opportunities, and he told me this, I like the opportunities to talk to people and to encourage them. So God grants you much grace wherever you're at to seize the opportunity, do the work of the Lord, and give him the glory. Let's pray together.